Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Business Writers Radio, brought to you by Business Writers Exchange.
Welcome to another exciting and informative edition of Business Writers Radio. Stone Payton, Lee Cantor here with you this morning. Lee, how you doing, man? You ready for this one?
I am. I love talking to authors who are passionate about what they do.
All right. Please join me in welcoming to the broadcast best-selling author and keynote speaker, Scott Mautz. How are you, man?
Doing great. Love being here. Thanks for having me.
Scott, we're here to talk about your book, Make It Matter, How Managers Can Motivate by Creating Meaning. Can you talk a little bit about what sparked your interest to writing that book?
Yeah, I'm going to guess you get this story probably fairly often. I'm ex-corporate world, and I was one of those folks that had labored in the ranks of corporate world for a long time and saw that it was just simply a better way to do it. There was an awful lot of people around me in my work disengaged, and when I really started becoming interested in the topic of the book, which is creating meaning in the workplace, I started finding more and more research that uncovered. I don't think I'm just a one-off here. As it turns out, Gallup polls show whenever they run them, at least 70% of the American workforce can be coded as disengaged. And that's an incredible stat to me. And I was really seeing that, living that in my corporate world. And so it really began to become of great interest to me on there's got to be a better way to get folks deeply engaged in what they're doing. We deserve better than that. And so it was that firsthand experience that really started piquing my interest. And the more I researched the topic, the more I found out there was really a hole to be filled, I guess, the opportunity to really find a better way that leaders can motivate the troops. And that's what got me started.
Now, when you say there's 70%, what you said that 70% of the workforce is not engaged, is that, were you engaged at your level? Were you finding engagement in the leadership roles of companies? And it was just kind of the troops that weren't engaged, or was there a disengagement at all levels?
It was at all levels. And the statistics would tell you that, surprisingly, you would think it would, just by definition of being a leader, you have no choice but not to be engaged. But the data doesn't necessarily support that. It's 70% amongst the general troops. And as you go up the ranks, it's not that much better. You get, only 50% disengaged among leadership. So me personally, I was still engaged in finding ways to help elevate the engagement of my troops. And again, that really sparked that, I think I'm onto something with finding ways to create meaning for the workforce.
But the way you took your book, it seems to me, you mentioned a lot of research and studies and things like that, that you didn't just take anecdotally, hey, this is how I handle these situations, and I'm just kind of just sharing that with you. You took kind of a research tact when you were putting this book together.
That is, that's for sure. And in fact, at least for me, I didn't want to, Lee, I didn't want to write the kind of book that was just based on my opinion. And I'm not saying there's a lot of great books out there with very informed points of view. I was experiencing it personally. And that's what really sent me on my journey to research and make sure I wasn't just, it wasn't just me. And that's what I really set off on a journey. Actually, the book took me quite a long time to write. I actually spent 5 years writing this book. And the first 2.5 years were nothing but research, combing through every possible thing I could come across on what causes disengagement in the workplace, connecting with universities all over the world, combing through study after study after study. So, yeah, it's a very heavy research-based book that came out of an individual premise that I was experiencing that I wanted to then go verify.
Now, when you're working at this, you said you're a former executive. You're working in the weeds in that organization, is this something that you're all talking about of how do we get more engagement, or does everybody think it's okay?
Yeah, wow, that's a really great question. Most organizations don't realize the extent of the problem, like what it causes for performance. Most organizations will tell you, look, we know we probably have an engagement problem, but we're going to rank that in terms of things we need to address a lot farther down the food chain. We have other things we need to work about, like we need to get the vision set appropriately. we need to get the right diverse mix of candidates in a leadership team. You know, they'll list many things above disengagement as a problem. And what they don't realize is what the statistics and data shows for how engaged organization links up with the highest performing organizations of all. It's not just an indicator. It's the indicator in terms of fully engaged workforce. Part of what I do in my keynoting is help organizations understand you're going to need to move engagement up your priority list of things you need to address, because let me make sure you really understand the impact it has on high level and peak performance.
Now, is this something that's generational? Because you hear a lot of the millennials talking about meaning and that they want to work in organizations that are doing, you know, some social good or things like that. Or is this, you know, where maybe an older generation is like, look, I'm hired to do this job. I'm going to do it to the best of my ability. You know, the why part is a nice to have, but it's not a must have. But to the younger people, it seems like the why is almost a must have at this point.
Yeah, super question. I get that one a lot. The truth is that 70% of us, all of us, no matter what your age, are on a greater search for meaning and a reason to be engaged at work, even than we are in life. So, you know, 70% are more engaged, are looking for meaning at work, which is even greater percentage than people that are looking for meaning in life. And the difference here is that the millennials are just becoming more vocal about it. The broader workforce still has that gnawing feeling of, man, there has got to be more than work here than this. The difference, though, Lee, is the older generation will stick it out. And there's a larger percentage of people that have effectively quit and stayed within their jobs, realizing or assuming, look, I would love more meaning in my work. I'm not going to get it from work. So I'm going to find it from other places in life, whether it's my church or my social community or my friends or whatever. Millennials are showing in droves very clearly they're not going to stick in a place that doesn't have purpose and mission and all the kinds of things that can produce meaning at an organization. So they will job hop much more so than the older generation will. But the general problem in malaise still does exist amongst the broad population.
Now, do you think that just philosophically, is that a fair for the organization to say now, not only do I have to, you know, build a better mousetrap, I also have to help my employees find meaning?
I think it's probably very fair. It's probably one of the reasons why I'm such a busy keynoter. Is more and more organizations are feeling it. Here's the interesting thing, Lee. Look, it's not like we're evil and we're not doing anything about the lack of disengagement. A lot of the organizations that I visit, and the data will support this, most leaders, if you were polled, they will tell you, look, you want to solve disengagement? It's one of three things: perks, promotions, or pay. And it's simply not true. The data doesn't support any one of those. I can go into any one of those if you want me to, but it doesn't support that what sustains engagement over time. The data is becoming clearer and clearer. What really sustains motivation over the long haul is producing meaning. So it's becoming more of a, wow, we really need to figure this out to more and more companies. Still lower on the awareness scale that I would like from based on what I know, but it's progressing in its awareness level.
But how does a firm, like, how do you kind of, some of your work is also not only speaking, but you do some consulting as well. Is that true?
Yep, that's right.
So how do you help like a firm that's like an accounting firm or something that is kind of a commodity where they're like, look, the taxes on the 15th, all these things are going to be due, you know? We don't have time for meaning. You know, we'll do meaning on in May. May is meaning month.
That's well said. And here's the coolest part about this, Lee. First of all, you know, meaning, it's important to note, it's not a privilege concept, right? It's not just for doctors and lawyers and teachers that are, it's patently obvious where the meaning comes from their jobs. Everybody can find meaning at work. And I mean everybody. One of the most fascinating set of studies I've uncovered shows that zookeepers are among the most enriched organizations or one of the most enriched job classes out there, which doesn't make sense at first glance because there's not a lot of opportunities for promotion. There's only one zookeeper.
Right.
They don't make a ton of money. Some of their work is really dirty work, but they know that they have purpose because if they don't take care of these animals, who else is going to do that? So that bridges me to a direct answer to your question then, which is, okay, so all right, Scott, I'm buying it. Anybody can produce meaning. But back to the accounting firm, they don't have time. And how do they do it? Like, come on, give me a break. Meaning we got to hit our April 15th deadline. Well, the surprising thing is here, Lee, is I've been studying the field of meaning for almost two decades now, and I've uncovered very clear, very data-driven themes that I call the markers of meaning. There's seven of them. I'm not going to touch on all of them here unless you want me to. I'll give you a few examples. But there are ways that leaders, even in accounting firms, can foster meaning in and at work, both in the work they do and at the place they do the work. I'll give you just a few examples to show what I mean. So even if you're an accounting firm, the amount of meaning that we draw, learning and growing, almost beyond description. So an accounting firm simply committing to, we're going to hold opportunities, even if they're short, 1 hour lunch and learns, even in the middle of tax season, we're going to hold those on a pedestal, because the ability for someone to continue improving themselves, seeing them learning and growing and become a greater version of themselves, cumulatively over time, that adds up to an employee believing my company is investing in me. And all those little things that are so easy to blow off, those lunch and learns, for example, that are easy to blow off for, meeting number 1,610 that you have to go attend, those add up and produce a sense that I'm becoming a better version of myself. We can create meaning when we do simple things like continually boost the self-esteem of the workers and the sense of competency in the workforce. Small little ways, things you can do to avoid crushing the self-esteem of others, and being very cognizant of the way you provide feedback and how you go about it to ensure that you're giving little doses of boosts of self-confidence throughout the day. They cost nothing. All they cost is intentionality. You can also be serious about granting autonomy, even in an accounting firm. The power that autonomy has in creating meaning and self-sustained motivation is, I could do a show for an hour just based on that. I'll give you just one, small example. The Journal of Personality and Psychology recently produced a report that said the number one thing that most can be attributed to whether or not someone says I'm happy and I'm satisfied, productive in my work life is whether or not they're being granted autonomy. Not, am I getting paid enough? Not, am I at the promoted level that I thought? Autonomy. So even a busy accounting firm can do things like holding learning and growth opportunities sacred, granting autonomy, and being thoughtful about how they provide feedback, for example, to keep self-esteem and self-confidence boosted along the way, and doing it in regular intervals. Does that make sense, Lee? And these are just the ways you can boost meeting.
It does. It sounds like you're speaking to the culture of the company more so than the, what they do or produce. It's the kind of the heart of company.
I think so. And the leaders, of course, are they help produce the culture of the company. So the small things that they can do that are incredibly powerful are often overlooked when, tax season is upon.
Now, and to your point, though, this can't be something that, the leadership, reads an article or reads your book and says, look, 70% of our people are disengaged. Here, tell them on Wednesdays, there's a lunch and learn that we're going to talk about this. And then, just write a memo and then kind of expect the culture to change. This has to be kind of demonstrated through their actual actions, not just their words, right?
That's exactly right. And, regards to culture, a lot of it starts with what kind of culture are you going to build up? And, one of the markers of meaning that I talk about in Make It Matter is the data is super clear on, Lee, there's all kinds of great cultures. Okay, there's books, entire books written on cultures of innovation, cultures of accountability, cultures of discipline. They're all great. The discerning point that I'm making is if you want to build a culture from the ground up that is meaning rich, which sustains motivation over the long haul, and that's the key, sustains motivation over the long haul, there's three core elements to that culture: a culture of caring, a culture of authenticity, where people are encouraged to be themselves and bring their whole selves to work, and a culture that truly embraces teamwork. Not in the obvious, like, oh, that's super insightful, Scott, you're telling me we need teamwork. But from the angle of investing and reinvesting in teamwork helps individual workers create a sense of belongingness and a sense of group cohesion, because it turns out that individual fulfillment is indeed often a group effort. So you're right in poking at, it has to be part of the culture. Even more specifically, building a culture based on caring, authenticity, and teamwork is the baseline. Then you start building on top of things like I was talking about. Okay, now we have to have a program of authenticity, or a program of autonomy, doing things to offer self-esteem, doing things to help people feel challenged and learning and growing. So it's eminently doable if you know what to build upon and if you're committed to it as an organization.
Now, do you think that organizations in today's world, which organizations have changed dramatically over the last, probably since the beginning of your career to today, now there's so many virtual kind of workers, and that and employees aren't necessarily what employees used to be, you know, back in the day when they used to work for a company for a long period of time. Now they might work for your company. They might work for, you know, a driving company at night. Their place might be an Airbnb. They could have four different kind of jobs or places of employment. Do these companies that work with these virtual workforces, can they create this kind of meaning in their operation in order to create some sense of loyalty to get more performance out of their virtual workforce?
Absolutely. It's a great question. And if you troll any one of the annual reports that seems to come out on greatest places to work, you know, of course, for my line of interest, I study those intensively, and there's multiple versions of them. You will find that amongst the top 50 organizations to work, there's a heavy percentage of them that have two things in common. Number one, they can be coded as meaning rich, and development is sustained over time because they're intuitively putting a lot of the markers of meaning in place that I talk about and make it matter, number one. And number two, surprisingly, they have embraced role flexibility and people being able to work in diverse locations. So it's not just something that has to be, you know, you got to be in the office and face to face all the time. Perfect example. One of the markers of meaning, Lee, that I didn't get to was maybe the most important, which is doing work that matters. And it doesn't matter where you're located. If you as a leader can help frame up for your people what the purpose is behind their work and what the legacy is that they want to leave behind, purpose being the profound why, which has come into great popularity through Simon Sinek, and what's not as known is the profound what, the legacy. What is the legacy that you, dear employee, want to leave behind in your job? All of a sudden, that's location agnostic. It doesn't matter where you're at. You're imbued with a greater sense of my work is important and it matters. I could do it from anywhere. And then you can layer on things like making sure that the vision as a leader that you lay out connects to the individual purpose and mission of each person. So every single person can track, okay, I got it. Our vision is this. The way my job feeds into that is through these three linchpins. And you can help provide that path as a leader. And again, that is location agnostic, just for a few examples. So yes, you absolutely can produce a meaning-rich organization, even if you have a scattered workforce.
Now, and doing this meaning-rich workforce and workplace, don't you really have to say at some point, you know, the best place for you might not be here anymore? You know, we're giving you a lot of autonomy. And that, you know, you're ready for maybe a different challenge. If you're really looking out for that person, isn't that part of that person's growth? It might be without you, right?
That is exactly right, Lee. And where people, I don't want people to take the message wrong that produce a meaning-rich organization, do all seven markers of meaning in place, and no matter, you know, if the person isn't making it, it's their own fault because you gave them all the tools. That's simply not true. Some of the richest and most important things we can do for people is to be brave, first of all, in telling them when you know they're not a match for the organization. Be absolutely brave. And some of the best feedback I have gotten in my professional career came from people who I helped them understand, look, we've worked together. We've tried a lot of different things. I don't think you're going to make it here. And in fact, I don't think you're happy here. You found deeper purpose and you find greater meaning in other things. Let's identify what those are. I help them bridge to that And, you know, 2 years later, I get some of the most heartfelt notes and some of the best feedback I've ever gotten as a leader, even though in the moment, it was one of the most difficult things that I had to do, you know, tell someone they don't have a role in an organization anymore. So you don't want to let those people that have quit and stayed sit there too much longer, not only because it's not great for your company, sorry to be so patently obviously here, but it's not the right thing for them either. So yes, you're right. Sometimes that's part of what creating meaning for an employee means, is helping them move on.
Now, if we could, let's talk a little bit about the actual writing of the book. You said it took you a while, and I would guess a lot of that is because you did, you are kind of using a lot of research and interviews and articles and things like that. Can you talk about your system of how you were able to organize that and to kind of wrap your head around what you were trying to accomplish, maybe going in, and how it happened with your finished product?
Yeah, sure. I'll be happy to do that. So for me, first of all, I think one thing that's important to note, my decision, when I decided I wanted to write a book, I was still in a high level in a corporate job that was, it was really intense and heavy. Like, I'm sure many of your listeners have probably experienced this, that they don't just quit and then decide to be an author full time. I'm guessing that the majority of people don't just decide to quit and be an author full time like that overnight. So for me, what was very important is, you know, there's you can self-publish, obviously, or you can choose to find a traditional publisher. Just for me and what I wanted to do with my business model, I chose the route to become to find a publisher. So knowing that, you know, when you find a publisher, you offer them the proposal, they become interested, and then they give you an amount of time, you know, whatever it is, 6 to 9 months to write it. Mm-hmm. I could not be in a position where, armed only with a proposal, I had 6 to 9 months to write a book. And I had, you know, the size job that I had. So for me, the right strategy was invest in the research up front and write the entire thing at risk. No, and then back write the proposal off of the book, knowing that I may have written this whole thing and no publisher is going to be interested. And then that'd be okay. I would adjust and go figure out a way to self-publish. Mm-hmm. So that was my strategy. So that is background. I had decided I was going to write the entire thing. Having decided that, I then backed up and let the research guide and lead me. And it soon became clear with, you know, it was important to stay focused on my premise, which is, my premise is we are indeed a disengaged organization, you know, world. And the second part of that premise is the other things that are happening, perks, pay, and promotion don't work. Meaning does. And then I continually denied, confirmed parts of that. And then based on that simple hole to fill, like, what does the world need that they haven't heard before that could help? I kept denying, confirming, and then the markers of meaning started to emerge. I started to confirm, like, my God, it really is true. We're broadly disengaged as a workforce globally and in America. And then I was able to confirm, you know what? Perks, the data supports that's not what sustains motivation, nor do promotions, nor do pay. Okay, well, if it's not those things, then what is it? Is it meaning? And then I started uncovering layer after layer of research on meaning. And then the themes started to evolve. And then I wrote my book around one chapter for each marker of meaning from that point forward. So that's how it kind of all evolved.
And then once the book was done and then you were out promoting it, is that where you were able to build your business kind of around the book, or use the book as kind of at least a thought starter to begin conversations with prospective clients?
That's exactly right. And what happened, I'm sure it's probably with many of your listeners, once the book is in place, you get a readership base. People come in, become interested. They want to, you know, have you come in more and more often. I developed a couple of keynotes off of that book. One that was an overview of the book. One that was based on a core chapter 4 on how you leave a legacy behind at work and in life, because it's a true source of meaning. And then once armed with that keynote, I then I started getting more and more opportunities to talk at my corporate job. I started, you know, practicing, for lack of a better word, and started just giving talks at the job for free. I guess it turned out at least I wasn't the biggest idiot in the world in talking. So I got hired, you know, quite a few times. So by the time that I actually left my corporate job to be author and speaker full time, I had already had a base of people to sell my books to, and had already given, you know, well over 150 keynotes just within my company globally. So that'll really allow me to travel around and hone my keynote, if you will, so that the keynote and the book could support each other mutually.
Now, have there been any surprises since you left kind of corporate world and now you're on your own?
I would say I've been surprised how busy I am, and I'm getting an awful lot of keynote speaking gigs from my past corporate world. It surprised me how fast it's taken off. I think the only other surprise that I would be able to point to is at some point I'm going to have a decision to make on whether or not I want to connect up with a speaking agent. And I've learned a lot. Surprisingly, I thought that, you know, speaking agents, once you get out there in the world and start speaking based on your book, would, you know, just come calling. The surprise to me has been most of my author friends have told me if you need a speaking agent and a speaking bureau, then they don't need you. So, in fact, that's not the way, you know, I didn't know that's the way of the world. So that's been a surprise to me as well. So I'm trying to create my long-term plan for, you know, when all of my short-term contacts run out, I got to make sure that I got a pipeline of other opportunities.
And one of the places you're going to be speaking is at the Business Writers Conference, April 19th to 21st in Alabama. Can you talk about that speech? I believe it's the Lighthouse of Legacy.
That's the talk you're being given? I'm really excited about that. I encourage people to really check it out. Yep, it's the second annual Business Writers Conference. Like you said, it's in Birmingham, Alabama, April 19th to the 21st. I'll be doing the closing keynote where I'm going to be talking about how writing a book can help you make an even sharper imprint on your legacy in your work, your professional work, and in your life as well. It's a riff off of a keynote that I do, a very popular keynote that I do on how to leave a legacy at work and in life, the ways that social science teach us that we're not even aware of, that we tend to leave a legacy behind. And if we only knew that, you know, you can help feed into those buckets a little bit more each day, and how a book can help imprint your legacy even more along the way. So I'm very excited for that. And I encourage your listeners to check out that conference, because I think it's going to be packed with really meaningful stuff for first-time writers and even more veteran writers.
And you believe that anyone can create more meaning in their work, even if their organization is one of the ones that 70% of their workforce is disengaged. The individual can find a way to create more meaning, right?
There's absolutely no doubt about that whatsoever. I had a discussion. You're gonna find this humorous, probably. I don't know. I had a discussion once with a parking lot attendant. I did a one-on-one coaching session who, he was in a rough space. He had a couple of things in his personal life that was making it very difficult for him to find work anywhere else. And so he was landed at a parking lot attendant, and he needed to do this job as a way to get by. And he came to me asking for, you know, help. So, you know, gratis, I helped him by telling him, you know, very quickly, a different story about a janitor I ran into at a children's museum. The janitor was walking around. I was taking my daughter through the children's museum. The janitor was walking around, whistling, having a great time, playing hide and seek with the kids. Not your average janitor. And I went up to him and I talked to him and I said, I'm so fascinated in your kind of approach to your job. And he pulls a card out of his wallet and tells me his, you know, it says right on the card, my purpose is to make the menial magical. And he wanted to reframe what it meant to be a janitor and to reconstitute the fact that it's not about, you know, cleaning messes and garbage up. My job is to bring 10,000 smiles to kids. And he literally had a little tattoo that on his hand that said 10,000. And that was his goal. He wanted to produce 10,000 smiles. And every time, and he showed me his little black book. Every time he induced a smile on a child, he pulled it out and he made a little hash mark. And so I told the parking lot attendant about the story to say any work can be reframed to a higher order purpose. I'm not going to tell you it's easy as a parking lot attendant. Okay. I don't want to be naive about this, but it's all how you reframe and look at the work that you do to help make it matter more. So yes, anybody can find meaning in their work.
What a marvelous story. Scott Stone here. Before we wrap, let's make sure that our listeners know how to get in touch with you, have a conversation with you or somebody on your team, and let's make sure they know how to get their hands on this book.
Bob, thanks for asking, Stone. The easiest way is probably to go to my one-stop shop, my website, which is simply myname.com. So that's Scott Mautz, S-C-O-T-T, M as in Mary, A-U-T, Z as in Zed, scottmouts.com. And you'll find access to my book there. I'll soon be posting about a new book I have coming out in the fall. You can find out about my keynotes, the different keynotes that I do, and see the range of clients that I've covered, and the long list of testimonials that I've got from my keynotes along the way. Scottmouts.com is the place to go.
Well, it has been an absolute pleasure visiting with you this morning. Lee and I will see you in April because we're going to be broadcasting live from that same conference. But we got to pick this conversation up, man. This has been a lot of fun.
I appreciate that. I look forward to seeing both of you there.
Yeah, so do we. All right. Until next time, this is Stone Payton for Lee Cantor, our guest today, Scott Mouts, and everyone here at the Business Radio X family saying we'll see you next time on Business Writers Radio.
Business Writers Radio is brought to you by Business Writers Exchange. To learn more about developing a successful book and building your business around it, visit business-writers-exchange.com.